welcome to episode 5 of Over the Counter, the podcast from Drug Topics. I'm Gabrielle Entile. In this episode, experts in telemedicine, artificial intelligence, and pharmacy highlight the major ways that telehealth is taking shape to rise and meet the tide of increasing COVID-19 cases. If you're listening to this podcast in the middle of July 2020, the United States has more than 3.5 million confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus, with most states still experiencing surges of cases. In a world of social distancing, technology is the solution to many of the challenges brought by the pandemic. Zoom links are replacing meetings, daily conversation, and birthdays, and social media is helping us stay connected while also staying spaced 6 feet apart. Telemedicine, artificial intelligence, and other technologies have come to the front lines amid the COVID-19 pandemic to provide care, assist in following the virus's path, and alleviate the strain being felt by our healthcare system. Dr. Ray Costantini, co-founder and CEO of BrightMD, launched SmartExam in response to the pandemic. Costantini said to think of their company as an automation company, where care automation is applied through telehealth.
So an easy way to think about it is think about us kind of like a virtual medical resident. So a patient's sick, and they're at home or at work, at their cube, on the bus, really anywhere. They can log in to SmartExam from their healthcare delivery systems portal.
The virtual medical resident goes to work by pulling out all kinds of information from the electronic medical record.
There's a chart review, pulling out things like meds, allergies, problem list, visit history, demographic information, looks at environmental and contextual information like location and seasonality, uses all of that to drive this dynamic adaptive clinical interview, a conversational AI platform.
This AI platform interviews the patient or provider, then takes all of the information, digests it, and gives it to the provider and frees them up from the administrative burden that comes with providing care. Instead of taking time to both interview the patient and doing administrative tasks such as documentation, order entry, prescriptions, and billing,
we streamline that process for the provider, make it so that they're able to spend their time really at top of license practice. Mm-hmm. And they're spending about 2 minutes on diagnosis and treatment rather than spending all of that time gathering and organizing and documenting information.
And in a time of a pandemic, clinical needs will skyrocket, making it even more difficult for healthcare professionals to balance all of their tasks.
One of the things I've seen in other epidemics, outbreaks, is that you have a huge increase in patient needs, clinical needs. And some of those come from the epidemic or the infectious disease itself, but a lot of them come from patient concerns. So in this situation, what happens is not only do you get the increase in need from the patients who are very sick with coronavirus, or the patients who have coronavirus but aren't terribly sick, you also get all of the folks, everybody who's got a cough now is concerned that it could be, and that's not an inappropriate question to be asking, mm-hmm. but they're all concerned that it could be coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And delivery systems have to be navigating that really massive increase in patient need.
I interviewed Dr. Costantini in mid-March of this year, just prior to when the United States began to see huge surges in cases. Even at that point, SmartExam was identifying high-risk individuals for COVID-19 and facilitating the screening process.
11,000 patients in a month, a typical provider can see about 100 patients a week in an in-person setting. So 11,000 providers, 11,000 visits in a month, we take a massive number of providers, and we're doing it with just a handful. We're helping our delivery systems do that with just a handful of providers, much, much less time because of all the efficiency that we've introduced. And that frees up that clinician capacity to be able to go and take care of all of these other rising needs that are out there.
Telehealth technologies themselves often incorporate artificial intelligence, or AI, to do the work of identifying high-risk patients or sifting through data. Steve Mock, PharmD, Manager of Pharmacy Services and Director of Health Outcomes Analytics Fellowship at Wolters Kluwer, knows AI.
And since I joined Wolters Kluwer, I have been engaging in quite a few projects on collaborating with our data science team on how we can leverage technology to improve the delivery of pharmacist-based patient care interventions to improve and optimize patient outcomes. So through kind of even though my background is on infectious disease and antimicrobial stewardship, a lot of the hands-on experience in the world of AI have been my collaboration projects with a lot of the data scientists, and kind of gained that experience in the past few years and seeing some of the exciting development in terms of what we can do when you put clinicians and technologists together that can derive the biggest benefit for our patients.
I asked Dr. Mock where we can see AI currently being used in healthcare and pharmacy, and here's what he had to say.
That is a loaded question. I will try to address that briefly. In my humble opinion, if you look at the human body and pathophysiology, the three major areas where we see the biggest promise in terms of AI would be in the prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of diseases. So if you allow me briefly, I will touch on a few of these. For example, prevention, as we see and learn more about different disease states, we're getting better and better in understanding what are some risk factors that lead to the development of certain disease states. You know, closer and nearer to my heart, a lot of infections, we have good understanding of what are some of the things that led to an increased risk for developing some of these bacterial or viral infections. So if we can leverage AI to identify these patients earlier, we may have an opportunity to remove some of those risk factors or change people's behaviors that may result in a low risk of infection, if you will. In terms of diagnosis, I'm sure some of you may have heard, even in the general news, a lot of the AI algorithm have now been deployed to read some of the radiology reports, looking at CT scans, stuff like that, to help physicians to augment the clinical decision making, using an AI to see if there's a disease process that they may have missed or to confirm some of the diagnosis that they have already made. Similar applications of AI can be used in the world of laboratory testing, vital signs, other records that are in the patient's charts, where the technology can help identifying patients with diseases a little bit earlier. So that's kind of where we see AI being applied for the diagnosis part of human diseases being the most promising. Finally, the last part I mentioned, treatment, is another area, right? So if we couldn't prevent and then diagnose a patient with a disease, what people are interested in is what about the treatment that can help the patients recover or manage the disease states. So I think in the world of treatment, we're seeing a lot of the researchers, you know, either academic or in the commercial setting, leveraging AI to help them with drug discovery, looking at new molecular entities, and identifying targets or agents that may be of interest, may have promise in terms of accelerating the path into becoming a usable human drug. More closer to the pharmacist's heart, some of these treatments also can have side effects. We're talking a lot about precision medicine these days. I'm sure you may have heard in your line of work. So how can we leverage technology to understand a patient's specific characteristics, such as their organ function, their genomics, and their race, and other characteristics to help identify some of those patients who may be at risk for having adverse outcomes or side effects from some of these treatments. And that may change some of the prescribing decisions. You know, a first-line drug that may be good for you may not be so good for me because of the differences that are inherent between us as two different human beings. So I think using technology has a lot of promise instead of having and I hesitate to use the term cookbook medicine to describe, you know, what is the first-line treatment. The first-line treatment may look different based on the patient's individual characteristics.
And as for AI use amid the pandemic, it's proving to be one of the lead innovations with the potential to support the healthcare system and drive telehealth initiatives. like contract tracing, for example?
What we're seeing with COVID-19, and I think some of the things that we are learning a lot about the disease since it was first identified at the end of 2019. We're learning the way that it's impacting the human body. And then we're also learning a lot about what treatment works and what treatment doesn't work, right? But I think the greatest area of interest right now is identifying patients who may have been exposed or who may have been at high risk for contracting the virus. We recognize that a significant portion of patients may be asymptomatic, and they don't even know they are carrying the virus, and yet at the same time, they can be transmitting the virus to other people who may be more vulnerable or at a higher risk of having complications. So I think some of the technology that we've seen so far using geographical locator or Bluetooth devices on your phone to identify whether you have been exposed to somebody who might have been identified as a carrier. And that can also facilitate the contact tracing, which is such a buzzword. It warms my heart as an ID specialist that this is a term that I know, but now it has become a common lingo in the lay community. So how can we use technology to do this very labor-intensive contact tracing if we could have the ability to actually put in a magical number that said, oh, this person is diagnosed with COVID-19, and then using the technology to roll back the 10 days, 7 days before where the infected individual had interacted with other people, and then notifying them that they might have been exposed so that they can take the proper precautions as well as getting tested. That is very, very exciting and promising. And certainly, we're not just talking about a proof of concept. This type of technology has already been widely applied outside the United States. And we see that recently Europe has reopened, and they have certainly enabled some of this technology in European countries where people can opt in to be notified, as well as opt in when the diagnosis is made to notify the chain of folks that may have been exposed to the infection.
Other ways that AI can take shape during the pandemic include deriving information from search engines. Here's Dr. Mock to explain.
Now, some of the things that we've seen, even without diagnosis, there's certainly a possibility as people do the searches, right? If you have a headache or you lost taste sensation, we see that people often, what is the first thing you do, thinking about these symptoms, you probably go to a internet search engine and type in those keywords to look for those things. And I think that can serve as on your mobile devices as using the search history can help at a macro level for local government a better understanding how many people or how many citizens in our locality searching for these terms. So even though we may not be able to test and contact trace 100% of our citizens for this disease, we can leverage some of those searches to help local government agencies understand how often are the citizens searching for these types of terms. Are we seeing an increase in volume or decrease in volume as a surrogate marker to have a better understanding of the impact of the disease in your local community?
Smartwatches and fitness trackers also have the potential to detect a user's symptoms even before they know they have any.
Some of these mobile devices, your smartwatch or your fitness tracker, many of them actually have an oxygen sensor in there that can measure your oxygen saturation. And oftentimes, again, detect changes in your oxygen saturation earlier before the onset of symptoms, or even though you may have a diagnosis, these sensors can detect that you may be going into trouble into developing a more complicated or severe case before you feel it symptomatically. So I think that is one area where we can see a lot of potential promise in terms of notifying the individual patient, like, hey, we notice there's been a change in your oxygenation level, maybe you should get this checked out. Similarly, we certainly are seeing a lot of research interest for the patients who do have a diagnosis and got admitted to the hospital. You all may have heard that a significant portion of the mortality associated with COVID-19 are those who end up getting put on the ventilator in the ICU. What if using AI, we're reading the records in the electronic medical records and reading those data and then identifying patients who are about to experience these clinical demise and pick them up earlier, right? Instead of waiting till they have developed into a full-blown respiratory failure, if we can identify those patients sooner, do other things that may have an impact in changing the trajectory of the outcome. We're talking here in the third week of June. Don't know when people are going to encounter this information, but earlier this week, we've seen some very positive results from the UK talking about the use of dexamethasone in changing the outcome or improving the outcome of patients with COVID-19. Wouldn't it be nice if we can actually utilize AI to identify those patients that may benefit the most from this treatment so that we can administer them much earlier and making sure that those patients have the best chances of surviving this illness?
So AI can also help researchers learn which drugs would work best in specific subsets of patients and can help identify side effects.
Certainly, everyone who have received some of these drugs will not have a good outcome. So what is the difference between those patients who didn't have a good outcome versus those who do have a good outcome? So then we don't indiscriminately give these medications that have potential side effects, right? Some of your audience are pharmacists. You're well aware that steroids can change your glucose metabolism. It can have significant side effects as well. So if the use of this drug is not likely to lead to a good outcome, why expose our patients to the risk of having some of these side effects? And I think that's very important work that needs to be done in the next few weeks as we understand this disease more and more to identify who are likely to benefit and who are not.
This is what Dr. Mock had to say about the role AI has within the pharmacy.
Some of the issues related to COVID-19 is that some of the patients will inevitably develop what we call secondary bacterial infections because their body is being attacked by the virus. So as a result, the immune system is weakened. So a certain subset of those patients will develop other more common, bacterial pneumonia, for example, or things that we see in hospital all the time, maybe a bacteria in the blood, stuff like that. Or maybe because they've been intubated for a long time, that tube that is down their throat, that can set them up for some of these infections. I think leveraging AI and then thinking about some of the early detection systems, for example, one area I haven't touched on yet is called natural language processing. Electronic health record contains a lot of data, including a lot of the laboratory results, vital signs, and a lot of the patient status. A lot of human input, for example, when a nurse sees something or a doctor sees something on a physical exam, all that data is still captured in a format that is not discrete. In other words, it's not a yes, no, it's not a number. So a lot of these are just natural sentences that we would say, this particular patient has a noted rash, or this patient has a not responsive. Those are things that are quite tricky for what we would call a rule-based system to pick up, So using AI, using natural language processing, where you can leverage AI to read some of that non-structured data, can drive very meaningful outcomes. So you mentioned earlier, how can pharmacists use this type of technology improving the patient care? Well, if they have this toolbox with the natural language processing, that can help them understand which of their patients are experiencing side effects of some of the treatment I mentioned earlier. Dexamethasone sometimes can have significant side effects. So if they go into some sort of central nervous system reactions to a steroid, these are not things that you can capture on the laboratory result. So really, it will be dependent upon the ability of having the program algorithm to read the notes that the nurses are charting or the doctors are recording so that the system can pick it up and notify the pharmacist, hey, this is a patient who may be experiencing a side effect to the medication and maybe we need another pair of eyes on it to see if there's an alternative treatment for that. But looking beyond the pandemic, how would that change the way that pharmacists would utilize technology to help their patients? I think, again, going back to the way that we think about that larger framework when we first talked about this, how can we identify patients who may potentially have some of these medication-related problems because of their genomics, right? Pharmacogenomics is another area where we hear a lot of interest and activity. So how can we leverage some of this advanced technology to read very complex information in the human genome and unlocking those sequences that have been correlated with particular side effects of medication so that we can change the utilization of those drugs looking at the identification of these side effects once they have occurred, you know, are there any early signals that we can leverage to identify a patient who's about to have a kidney failure during antibiotics before you can see the manifestation? You know, even if you can catch it 24 hours earlier, you can stop the drug earlier and stop the continual assault on the kidneys. So I think those are areas that are very promising for pharmacists to be an advocate for the patient in managing their medication.
Health in Motion's Chief Strategy Officer Richard Scholes, PharmD, discussed their telehealth technology called ERX Direct.
Every business I've ever been in, everything I've done with healthcare is the key is the patient. Now the patient / consumer, they've got to be central to the strategy or it can't be successful and it can't be sustainable. And
Dr. Scholes explained that the technology at Health in Motion isn't COVID-19 specific, but like many telehealth platforms, is adaptable to changing needs.
Part of the beauty of technology is ways to make that maze much more manageable for patients, because if the patients, if through frustration, through lack of access, whatever, they abandon their pharmacy therapy or any of their therapy initiatives or care plans through their physicians, is then we have a failure in outcome. And it's not necessarily because we weren't capable of getting a positive outcome. It's just that there was space between the dots that didn't get connected. Part of telehealth, part of our initiative is just connecting those dots. What COVID has been is an accelerant to that, because not only has COVID as a disease state put pressure on healthcare, but it's also brought into the spotlight is the importance of chronic disease management and prevention. And the reality is that our companies were born to make healthcare more efficient, get it to people more efficiently where they work and where they congregate. And that goes to chronic disease management. So the COVID per se has been a true accelerant to the acceptance of the type of healthcare that we're advocating for.
Health in Motion works to supplement healthcare professionals and to enhance the portability of care.
But our care space is what the hallmark of it is that it's synchronous communication of medical data to the provider. So the professional clinician, they get real-time heart and lung sounds. They get real-time detailed high-resolution pictures. There's a nurse at the bedside that at the exam table helping with the medical devices and working with the physician for doing the hands-on care that may be needed or desired for that physician to make the proper diagnosis. So it's a very, very large scope of care. We also have the direct-to-consumer components where the physician can do a virtual visit directly to the consumer on a personal device. But again, it has utility, but it doesn't have as robust diagnostic utility as does the care space. So we see a place for all of that. And when we see a pharmacist is part of that healthcare team, we see a pharmacist being imported into each of those different environments to bring that pharmacy knowledge to that encounter and to that patient, again, as part of that healthcare team.
In April, Health in Motion launched ERX Direct's Telemed, which is the connectivity component for pharmacists. It's implemented in pharmacies across the country. I asked Dr. Scholes about what steps a pharmacist should take to implement telemed services into their practice, and here's the steps he shared.
The first piece of ERX Direct Telemed that we're rolling out through Epic Pharmacies is connectivity. And they can implement this on various devices depending on their desired workflow. We have some pharmacies right now during the COVID where there's a pharmacist that is actually a part of the vulnerable population and chooses not to be able to come to the pharmacy, and appropriately so. So they do all their work on a personal device in their consultations on a personal device for their home, much like you and I are working from offices that are atypical from our normal day. And this enables those practitioners to participate in that market equally as robustly as if they were in their pharmacy. As far as what they have to adjust in their, it's really easy because it's a workflow. Their most significant change is, first of all, is they have to have a viable device with a camera, which is quite common now. We with a HIPAA compliant environment, so you wouldn't want to do a consult in a public area. And also is what they, I think the biggest change from a workflow standpoint is for pharmacists and community pharmacists is to be able to set aside time in their day to schedule consultations. That's they're so used to ad hoc consultations and on-demand workflow that scheduled consultations is somewhat of a new arena for them from a workflow standpoint.
And as for changes in telehealth this pandemic has brought to light,
is the fact that we have a vulnerable society from healthcare with comorbidities and some chronic diseases. I believe the spotlight that COVID has shined on those chronic disease states will have a lingering effect as to how we approach and practice population health going forward. That's going to take a implementation of a healthcare team to do that. And what we're doing through ERX Direct Telemed is making sure that our pharmacists are enabled to fully participate on that team. And I just kind of give you an example of how we're using now telemed. Urgent care providers actually having a care space or a clinic in a public school. So the school nurse becomes the enabler and the care coordinator for the student. It's really fascinating. I think we'll see a bigger focus on this post-COVID. Is that 38% of adults reported taking drugs with depression as a potential side effect within the past 30 days, and 23% are using drugs that are carried the risk of suicide symptoms. So this is an adult population, but also in student population, there are drugs that have side effects that the school nurse or the teacher or the principal may be seeing a difference in behavior. So bringing behavioral health, bringing pharmacists, bringing all these to the forefront to be able to assist the healthcare team to come to the proper analysis. And we've seen that by bringing the team together and facilitating that collaboration is where the magic of increasing the access and the quality comes in. So we're seeing that there's going to be a lot more focus on chronic conditions, on how the different components of the professions work together for the betterment of that patient.
That's all for this episode of Over the Counter. Check out drugtopics.com for full interviews and articles about technology and pharmacy amid COVID-19. And make sure to tune in next week for insights from industry experts on the latest news, trends, and innovations in pharmacy. If you enjoyed this podcast, please like, write a review, and share with your pharmacy friends. Thanks for listening.